Set your apps down, iPhone photographers. It's time for the Tiny Shutter Podcast with your hosts, Keith Tharp, Mark Sadowski, and Matt Hoffman.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Tiny Shutter Podcast. My name is Keith Tharp.
And I'm Matt Hoffman.
And Cricket.
Mark is sick.
Mark is on assignment today. Let's say that.
Oh, yeah.
He's on assignment with a tissue box.
Poor guy.
So what we're going to do is, since we have a lengthy interview to insert into the middle of this with one Benjamin Lowy, we are going to jump right into the news right now. What do you say, Matt? Let's go.
Let's do it.
All right. In news I love to hate, the iPhone 5S rumors are gaining steam. Cult of Mac has posted some predictions from an analyst, including a June release date, vibrant color choices, and the already behind schedule NFC technology that should be included in the new iPhone 5S release. Yeah.
So I'm scheduled for an iPhone 5 in February. Think I should wait?
I would, for sure.
Because of the vibrant colors?
Mostly because of the vibrant colors, to be dead honest with you. But hopefully some of the hardware bugs and other stuff kind of get rooted out. But head to tinyshutter.com and click on the links in the show notes, because the colors are really attractive. All right.
I'm going to go with the peach color.
Yeah, I was thinking about blue, but, you know, I mean, honestly, why the heck don't we have colors?
I don't know.
Manufacturing, I guess. Anyway, in update news, and pretty much update news is kind of going to consume the rest of our news today.
Yes, lots to talk about.
Tons of great updates, and one mediocre update. Instagram has launched a fairly significant update entitled version 3.2, and let's go over some of the things that it has. Most of it's going to be of interest to those of you who use the Instagram camera and the Instagram filters, but it now has camera roll image selector. Now, this is going to be specific to folks who have the iPhone 5. It's not going to be revealed on the iPhone 4 or the iPhone 4S, but what it is, or any of the other ones for that matter. But what it is when you go into select a camera, I mean a photo from your Instagram, I mean, geez, I can't even speak today. When you go in to select a photo from your camera roll, Instagram now has a new UI which gives you a preview on the top and a four column wide, so that would be two rows, four columns of selector on the bottom of your phone, so that you can select a image. It will preview it up in the preview screen above. If you don't like it, you can go and select another one. You can also scale, resize, and it gives you the square, the rule of thirds grid to do. So that's kind of cool. That right there is a really pretty neat and significant upgrade. And that one would probably be my favorite. It now has optional grid guide for live photos and a permanent grid guide for the scale and crop screen. So again, if you're selecting your images, it's there.
Have you tried the new filter?
I have not tried the new filter. Can you talk about that?
No, because I have not tried it either. In fact, I haven't used the filter in Instagram in ages. I'm not even sure I remember how.
Yeah, I haven't used a filter in ages either. It's not one of the things I do. I don't use the camera either, but the camera also has a new UI, and basically it's fairly similar to the image selector on the iPhone 5. I can't speak for what it looks like on the iPhone 4 or other models, but it gives you the square crop with a bigger button. Is it very similar on yours?
I'm taking a look right now.
A bigger round blue button.
Yep, that's exactly what it looks like.
Yep. So it's got a new UI for the camera interface, and the notes on it say that it has a new redesigned newsfeed. I'm not seeing much different on the newsfeed, but there is a little bit of difference on folks. Their portfolio feeds. So,
yeah, Now, I don't know if this feature in the camera is new or not, because I don't ever use the camera function within Instagram, but you can, you know, touch on the screen for focus and exposure.
Interesting. I don't know either. I don't know if that's new either or not, but it looks neat with the little bouncing circles.
Well, I'm fairly attracted to that, so I just keep touching different spots just to see that.
And again, for those of you who do use the camera and filters, filter photos are now saved in a separate album called Instagram in your iOS camera roll, so that's neat. And I guess there's also a Foursquare button located location availability.
Yes.
So that's nice. So anyway, a fairly decent upgrade for Instagram. And let's go into, I'm going to skip over my next one and move to Twitter, because Twitter, as you remember, 2 weeks ago, I think we talked about Twitter bringing on Instagram-esque filters to their photo lineup, right?
Yes.
Well, end of last week, Instagram notified users that it was pulling its support for what's called image cards to Twitter. And basically that was, you know, we talked about the fact that we didn't really use Twitter for anything other than the feature in Instagram. We would also select share this on Twitter. Now, if you want to do that, the link will bring you directly back to Instagram. I think there's a preview, but it's not a full size preview of the image. But then they are working towards having zero previews at all, and you have to come back to the Instagram neighborhood, whether it's on your iPhone or on the web.
Yeah, I don't think that really is going to bother me at all. I'm sure there's some people that are probably upset about this, but I'm definitely not one of them.
Nope. So Twitter, there are tons and tons of people that use Twitter. I'm not one of them, but I know there are plenty of people that live by Twitter. Twitter has announced, and actually launched rather, their answer to Instagram filters, and it's, from what I've heard, I haven't used it yet, but from what I've heard, it's just the most basic Instagram-esque kind of application that you can imagine, with a little bit of crop and scale features and some odd 16, I think, filters that you can apply. And they're, you know, very basic stuff with some tinting, some black and white, some oversaturated, some undersaturated. So,
yeah, I believe it's actually only 8 filters. When you look at the, like, all the filters, there's 9 squares, but one of them is no filter.
filter is that?
They are really just basic. It's, well...
Oh, you know what I didn't mention is that Instagram also claims to have updated their tilt shift filter. Now, I looked at it and checked it out, and it seems same old to me. But again, I haven't used Instagram's features in eons, so.
we're not very good.
Let's just talk about something we know about.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the really awesome Snapseed update. Have you updated yet?
I have.
And so, you know, I had a whole spiel about this, but why don't you tell me what you feel is the most significant addition to the new update?
Well, if I could get it to work, the most significant addition to me would be the Google Plus.
Really?
That I could, yeah.
It's funny, because I wasn't even going to mention that. That's how important it is to me.
Well, I'm interested to hear, you know, what you have to say about it. Because honestly, yeah, there's, you know, some changes and some there's a new filter and some new frames and things like that. But honestly, to me, it's not really that much different.
Well, so let me go with this. I'll say that the most significant, in general terms, addition is that the fact that it's now permanently free.
Yes.
There's no more.
It doesn't affect me since I already own it.
Right. So that's the second part of my spiel. For those of you who have already purchased it, that upgrade doesn't mean crap to you. I can tell you, and believe me, I understand it's a little bit of one of those things where it's like frustrating. You know, it's free now after I paid $5 for it. But the app is really worth it. I've used it for years. I'm very happy with it, and it's worth $5. There's no reason to get grumpy about that.
Yeah, I had somebody comment on one of the photos that I posted on Instagram a few days ago, something to the effect of they wish they could get their $4.99 back. And I commented that, you know, yeah, that would be neat if somehow that happened. But honestly, in the year or so that I've had Snapseed, I've gotten more than my $4.99's worth out of it. And that particular Instagram user did agree with me and said, yeah, you know, it definitely was worth the money. So I guess it's not a big deal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, if we had more time, I would go into how I think that Google's making a mistake doing that, but we'll move beyond that. Maybe we can chat about it some other time. What I feel, actually, for those of us who have already paid for it, what I feel the most and biggest and awesomest update or upgrade to this update is the availability of now being able to browse for a picture when you're looking to import. You can now go to your photo library, choose one, and it gives you a preview of it. And then you can say, no, that's not the one I want. Go back and choose another one and say, nope, that's not the one I want. And then, oh, yep, that's the one. And then click use. Whereas before, when you click one to import, it would take you right back into the editing environment. And if that wasn't the one you wanted, now that you've got to be able to see it larger, you have to go back into the add and import whole rigmarole. And if you know, this could take two or three times to find the one from the little 3/4 inch by 3/4 inch thumbnail. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that is definitely a pretty cool feature.
So from my opinion, that is probably the biggest update. They've also added this new Retrolux filter that they're calling it. And basically this is just another lo-fi-ness kind of thing that it gives you however many filters that you can click randomize on several times. And then if you want to get more involved, you can randomize the light leaks independently of the scratches.
It's just a bunch of different tones and, yeah, like you said, light leaks and scratches and all that kind of nonsense. And some of them are kind of cool, but I tend to dial them all back a ton.
Right. And then the other one, similar type of update, is the frames, like you mentioned. And frames is one of the things that I very, very rarely ever used in Snapseed in general. It just wasn't one of the things that I felt Snapseed did well.
No, they were actually really terrible frames.
Yeah, and if it's possible, I feel like their frames environment is worse now. There's just nothing there that interests me. And the fact that now, you know, you used to be able to try and dial in the width and the offset and kind of get one thinner or thicker the way you wanted. Now you only get what they decide, and you have to sit here and, again, play with some kind of randomized button, and it doesn't work for me.
Yeah, they definitely took away some features. I don't think the frames in general are as bad as they were. I think some of them are definitely usable, but they did take away some of the functionality.
Yeah. And so in my notes, I kind of mentioned that they give you more options with less control.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think that's it for news. Am I missing something?
Those were the updates that count.
Yeah, that's it as far as news goes. It was those major updates and the fact that we're probably going to start seeing some iPhone 5S rumors churning soon. So we are going to break now for our interview with Ben Lowy. All right, folks, here we are with Benjamin Lowy. I have him on the line, and I also have co-host Matt Hoffman here with me. We're going to chat with Ben about the Time magazine cover, but also about mobile photography as it relates to photojournalism in general. How are you today, Ben?
I'm pretty good. Thank you for asking.
A while back, actually just, what was it, two episodes ago, right, Matt, that I had the interview on NPR?
Yes.
And right after that, I was able to get a hold of Ben and get him on the show, and here he is. So, Ben, let's start off with your history in photojournalism first, and just kind of give me a quick background as to how you got into photojournalism and how you came up to start shooting for Time magazine.
Well, this is about, you know, 12 years ago. Well, now I'm feeling old. I was in school and I kind of really wanted to be a comic book artist. It wasn't really working out for me. And I used to go into Library Limited in St. Louis, which was a Borders bookstore. So it's not around anymore. I used to go take like Howard Schatz nude, you know, photography books or like fashion books and like trace the figures in it because I wanted to do better, more realistic comic books illustrations. And you know, those are all like pretty tall, big books. So I would just randomly go to the photo section and pull out these tall, big books. And I pulled out Noctway's Inferno, this tome of man's inhumanity to other men. And it changed my life. I sat there transfixed in the bookstore and was like, this is what I need to be doing. And I ended up taking a year off from school and kind of teaching myself photojournalism in the field and kind of grew from there.
So right now, are you on staff with anybody or are you just...
I mean, I'm represented by Reportage by Getty Images, which is a kind of a boutique agency within the Getty Images, you know, family. But that's not, you know, that's still for the most part freelance.
Right.
You know, so I you know, promote myself not very well these days, but, you know, and you try and pick up assignments from clients. Of which there are fewer and fewer.
So somewhere I read that you are quote unquote labeled as a conflict photographer. Is that what you would label yourself as?
I guess, you know, that's how I started as, and that's always what I've wanted to be. I think
for everybody listening, what would you define that as?
I mean, a conflict photographer is someone who primarily documents conflict, wars, aftermath, disasters, you know, stories of that kind of caliber that stay in the news. I think I've done a lot of that. You know, I spent about 6 years in Iraq, back and forth, and about five in Afghanistan, and I've done a few like Darfur and Libya and a few other places as well. But I think that's changed a lot for me in the sense I have two children, two young children now, and I live in New York. And, you know, the economy being what it is, people aren't really paying to send photographers
sure.
out anywhere anymore. You kind of have to live there. So there are, like, a lot of people who live in Egypt and then can cover that region, or people who live in Kabul who can cover that. And so I found myself the last 2 years working much more, besides from Libya, much more domestically. And I would say, like, I am a feature photographer who has done a lot of work covering conflict, more than just primarily dedicated to conflict. I think part of it is realizing who you are, what you are in the photography world. And when you start, these labels are important.
Sure.
It's, you know, it's very much how you define yourself. And I think as you get older and realize that those labels aren't as important as the work you produce. So whether or not I am a conflict photographer or a feature photographer or just a photographer, you know, I'd probably call myself more a photographer than even a photojournalist because I enjoy making images that don't always have to tell stories. I mean, sometimes it's just about having the serendipity of life come together in your frame.
That's actually good, because that leads me into a segue from a quote from you. After Damon Winter's photo won the third place in the photo of the year, mm-hmm. you had a live chat on Pointer.
Right.
And one of the quotes from there was, "Photojournalism is not just journalism, and it's not just photo. It's not just Jesus. Photojournalism is not just journalism. It is also photography. Our job is to capture content, but also present it in an aesthetic way to capture the audience's attention and deliver our message." So that kind of goes in the same kind of line of what you just said. And we had covered, or briefly covered, the story about Damon Winter's pitcher, and we talked about the two things that came up in that pointer conversation of people having photojournalism is supposed to be telling the truth, or photojournalism is supposed to convey a story. And truth and story seem to be like two almost opposite things when you're talking about photojournalism.
Why?
Because story
is a version of the truth.
Sure. Story, when I say story, it's something that you're creating. It doesn't, and I don't mean to necessarily say that it is opposite. I'm just saying some people can pitch it that way. So story is something that you are creating, and it can be a version or the exact truth. It doesn't really have to be either one. But sometimes people can kind of put a delineation between truth and story.
I mean, this is a debate that I think can go on forever when you talk about whose truth. Like, if you and me were standing in a room, that, you know, we would take a picture in this room, and it wouldn't be the same. It would be different, and it would be two different perspectives, because we as human beings are a product of all our experiences we've ever had in our lives, and they all... is something that accumulates inside us when we take a picture. Like, the reason we press the shutter at that specific moment,
yep,
is a product of everything that we've gone through in our life. And, you know, I'm tall and you're short, or, you know, or I mean, I don't even know. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so, quick example, Republican National Convention, I am standing on the other side of Clint Eastwood. I didn't even see the empty chair.
Oh, nice.
So I'm making a picture of Clint Eastwood, and I'm like, I don't know what is going on. Is that picture any less true because he just looked like befuddled talking to the air?
Right.
Because I was on the other side. I didn't see the chair. So is that picture any less true because the chair wasn't in it, because I didn't see it?
That's an awesome story right there. I have a question from our second or third co-host, actually, Mark Sadowski, and a very general mobile photography question. Why iPhone over, I mean, and it seems like it's an obvious answer, but why iPhone? What's the advantage over carrying a DSLR or even a point and shoot?
Can I just interrupt and kind of start before that question? I want to know what got you started using the iPhone for photojournalism in the first place.
I experiment a lot. I'm a big fan of experimenting, of experimentation making visuals, because I think, you know, just like if you're a gearhead and you get a new piece of equipment, you're always like all over it, want to use it right away, and it's inspiring. And sometimes when you hit that plateau with your work, and you're looking for some new way to talk or some new way to do things, you know, a new piece of equipment will always help you out. You know, so I've always gone through tons of different cameras. And when I go on assignment, I usually take four different cameras with me, you know, just to play around, to keep my creative juices flowing. So that's one reason that plays into this. I had been shooting with cell phone cameras on and off for years, and even with the 2004 Republican convention in New York, I did a series with a Nokia. I think it was like a K750 or something like that. Or like when I was in Iraq, I photographed like porta potty graffiti with my Nokia at the time. So I mean, it's like, you know, I was experimenting with all these things, anyways. But and when I first got an iPhone, you know, pretty much, it was before I had kids, so I'd photograph my dogs when I went to the park with them, you know, like normal stuff that pretty much everyone does.
Sure.
I got an assignment from a client in, I think it was like June or July of 2010, and it was to shoot with an X-Pen. They wanted me specifically to shoot with an X-Pen to make panoramic shots on chrome film in these abandoned uranium mining towns in Colorado. And I haven't shot with film on an assignment ever. I mean, my career is digital. So I was terrified. not only that, but I'm shooting chrome, which is, you know, more terrifying than just shooting a negative, because you have to be spot on. I'm using a camera that I never used before. I hate rangefinders. So I was like, oh, this is going to be horrible. You know, this is going to be bad. And this Hipstamatic app, I had just sort of discovered it. I think my wife had shown it to me. And so when I was out there shooting with these, with the X-Pen, I started making pictures with my iPhone with Hipstamatic and made this little cool border, and the images looked, you know, evocative. And when I came back to New York after the assignment was over, I dropped off my film to be processed at a lab and came home and printed out these iPhone images on, you know, my desktop printer on kind of glossy paper. I printed them like, I don't know, 8x8, I guess. And before the film came back, I brought those into the client and I showed it to them. And they're like, oh, these are great. Never seen this great texture. I love this frame. What camera did you use for this? And I kind of mumbled something under my breath. I was like, it's a little good. Blah, 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 blah. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's a great camera. you know, I was really trying to play it like, you know, I don't know what I was trying to play. I didn't want to admit it was an iPhone because I figured that would have disqualified it immediately. And, you know, the chrome came back from the lab and it turned out okay. And they liked those. And then they were going to run both. And they finally asked me, like, seriously, what camera did you use to shoot this? Because is it like an SX70? They were like, we have no idea what this is. I was like, that was my iPhone. And
what was the response?
Yeah, they ran it on the web. They didn't print it. but they were still amazed. And I was amazed that it got that far. And so I just began using it more and more. And I had been, even before that, dabbling, not with photojournalism, but with shooting textures and things in New York and keeping this Tumblr blog. I've had this Tumblr blog, I think, since mid-2008, where I've put an image or tried to put an image a day on there since mid-2008. And I'd been posting images that I shot with my iPhone. So that was even before I discovered Hipstamatic. But I wasn't using the iPhone specifically for photojournalism until that point. And I kind of, then I had been using it just for making like artsy kind of textured images. And now I started seeing that it had an application to what I was doing normally with my DSLRs.
If you had to put like your biggest advantage for using the iPhone in photojournalism, what would that be?
I don't get scoliosis.
I love that.
Yeah, I mean, you're carrying a lot less gear, sure. And your reaction time to scenes in front of you are much quicker. So there is that. You're kind of losing a little bit creative control in the moment. And I'm not talking about using the filters and all that stuff, but just like the absolute creative control with creating depth of field or staying in control of your shutter speed. You lose that. There's a trade-off there. And you know, being able to control like the speed of the lens. But you can work so quickly and move in and out of a space very, very quickly and very inconspicuously, which I think is very important, especially in the work I've been doing of late.
Excuse me.
I think there is specifically like, you know, stuff I did in Libya or stuff I did with Sandy where, you know, you're not throwing a huge camera and a huge lens in someone's face. You're actually able to get much more intimate with the subject, I feel, using the phone than I would a DSLR.
And that's mostly because, or I'm asking you actually, would you feel that that's mostly because when you've got a big chunky DSLR wrapped around your neck, they feel, and they know what you do, they feel that that image is destined to be somewhere other than just on the hard drive of that camera. And so they might be a little more easy thinking that the iPhone photo isn't going somewhere.
No, I think if you're putting yourself as a journalist, you're already creating that barrier. But I mean, just in the sense of working quickly and moving, I think that, yeah, you attract less attention to yourself just by using, you know, a cell phone than you would having a big camera. You know, it's quite a big tool to throw in some crying woman's face or some man in anguish over losing his home or his child.
Sure.
In the midst of war. I mean, to just, you know, throw a big camera up in their face to take a picture, you know, can sometimes either one, interrupt the situation, or be construed as being completely unempathetic or disrespectful, and really bring attention to what you're doing. And then sometimes, yeah, you have a phone and you can just, the way you shoot with a phone is very different than a camera. You don't close both, you know, one eye. I mean, you can actually meet the subject eye to eye and talk to them as you're photographing. You just kind of glance down, because you're holding the phone much further away from your body and from your face than you would your SLR or your rangefinder.
Right.
And I think that in itself also engenders like a kind of trust/empathy, because you can actually talk to the subject in a much more personal way than you would with a bigger camera.
Now you're not hiding behind a big chunk of black metal.
Right. At the same time, that shield, that protective psychological shield of the camera is gone.
Right. You kind of touched on earlier that the photojournalism sort of industry is changing. Mark has a question that kind of plays into that, is where do you see photojournalism evolving with this? We have so many citizen photojournalists out there. Do you see that kind of affecting the professional level of photojournalism?
You know, we all have kitchens, but none of us are like master chefs. And we all have pens, but not all of us are like amazing drawing, you know, painters. We all have computers, but we all can't make like, you know, Facebook. So, I mean, I think, you know, just because everyone has a tool doesn't mean the quality of the work, that everyone's going to be masterful photographer. And just because we have all these applications with their filters and their borders that make, you know, pictures of your floorboards look awesome, or your cat or your lunch, I mean, those aren't going to stand the test of time, because it's really, at the end of the day, it's bodies of work that an artist can present rather than one picture. And it's the story and the presentation that you're giving. So I think, you know, quality will always trump, you know, whether or not everyone has these tools. That being said, it seems that, you know, newspapers and magazines and internet, you know, sites are much more interested in quantity rather than quality these days, and having, you know, when you have like CNNI reports, or when the New York Times starts accepting everyone's images, it definitely, you know, degrades the, you know, the market for those of us that consider ourselves professional photographers. So what I think is that there'll always be room for the professional photojournalism. I don't think the industry is dead. I think it's changing. I think kind of the parachuting in spot news coverage will not really exist as a career option. I think long-term feature photography coverage and in-depth stories will be what keeps the industry rolling along.
Have you ever parachuted in somewhere?
I'm when I say parrot, I mean.
I was just kidding.
Yeah.
Because I would have been like really cool. All right, let's go to the Time magazine cover specifically, and that was shot with Hipstamatic.
Yeah.
Now,
go
ahead, Matt.
Absolutely. Did you use the lens and film combo that Hipstamatic made in Your Name for that?
Yeah. Yeah, I did, which has not been released yet.
the fact that you use those hasn't been released. Is this an exclusive?
No. The lens and film pack that that I made in conjunction with Hipstamatic that bears my name hasn't been released to the public yet. It's still sort of in various beta forms.
Neat. How did you find out about it, Matt?
The internets.
Yeah, it's been out there for a while. It's been that news has been kind of trolling around.
Trolling.
I get a lot of messages on Instagram and Tumblr and all these places from Twitter from people who are like, so when is this thing finally coming out? And you know,
there's no answer. You're under NDA.
Well, I just don't know. It's like we're always trying to perfect it and make it work.
It kind of got touched on in the in the NPR interview, but was Time Magazine looking specifically for a Hipstamatic or iPhone photo, or was this something that just happened?
Well, they hired me and four other photographers who have all been, you know, using the iPhone for professional reasons for the last few years, and sort of made our name with using the iPhone. And they asked us specifically, the five of us, to document, the hurricane and its aftermath with our phones and upload them to the to Time Magazine's Instagram feed. And then, you know, when they started putting in the magazine together, they were looking for a cover. And I think all of us had shot with, like, I carry a Fuji X100 rangefinder, small rangefinder with me. You know, I took other pictures. So within that Time Magazine, I had another picture published that was taken with, you know, my rangefinder digital camera. And they were just like, you know, going through the pictures, whether they're iPhone or 35 millimeter that we had all taken over that, you know, those first few days, and like, they just settled on the one I had, that specific one, and said, okay, that one's, you know, whether it was the art director or whoever, like, decided that was going to be the cover.
Excellent.
Where did you grab that shot from?
Coney Island, as the storm surge was coming in, so I kind of waded into the water. It was me and two friends of mine who we were all out there. There were a bunch of photographers who went out there. I mean, that was kind of a great space to go as all the storm surge was coming in during the day, and because the waves were just massive, and you know, we were about, I don't know, waist deep in the water. And this guy, and he was actually cropped out of the photo, this guy named Alberto, he didn't speak a lot of English, had never seen a hurricane like that, never seen waves like that. And he just kind of wandered into the frame in front of me. and you know, was just getting swallowed by these waves. I was like, oh, this is brilliant. So I just followed him around a bit as he like got pounded by the waves.
Brilliant.
You know, that photo is pretty intense. There's not a lot of blur to the waves, so you kind of see, you know, all the detail of that churning water coming in, which I think is pretty cool. And like, honestly, regardless of whether there's filters applied with Hipstamatic or not, you really get the sense of the power of that storm from that photograph. It's really a killer picture.
Oh, thank you.
Ben, do you, I mean,
my boots were never the same.
I'm sure.
I, as you're telling the story, it kind of occurs to me that this is a good question. Do you have a case on that phone?
I do.
What kind of case do you have on there?
Right now, I have I'm going back and forth between a few different ones, but I, at that point when I took that picture, I was using a Mophie, I guess it's the Air or the Mophie Plus. I mean, it's a battery case.
Right.
It's not like a protective case. It's just a battery case. But I've been using those battery cases for like 2 or 3 years now, and I swear by them. Actually, I was just shooting today, and I dropped my phone off like a 6-foot cliff, and it's just the battery case broke. The phone didn't.
Nice. I was wondering if you had something like an OtterBox or a life proof case or something.
No, not at all. I mean, I didn't hear anything out of my earpiece, like out of the speakers of the phone for like a good 2 or 3 hours after that. Like, but once the water dries, it works just fine. Believe it, my phones have been through some crazy stuff. That is, you know, being in the water is the least of it.
Wow,
least of it. Yeah.
Are you already up to the iPhone 5?
I haven't gone up to the iPhone 5 because I heard rumors that the iPhone 5S was going to come out in another 5 or 6 months.
I've heard that
and
too.
That's going to be where.
Are you still there?
Camera. So I was just gonna wait, and all my battery packs are iPhone 4S, so right. I didn't want to switch.
Makes sense. So you kind of alluded to it again in that NPR interview, but I wanted to ask you about Hipstamatic specifically. It seems like you've kind of got a little bit of you enjoy using that particular app. Are there other apps that you go for? Do you ever shoot with the native camera app or any other ones that kind of come in second or first place even?
I've actually taken a little bit of the break from the Hipstamatic right now, or at least changed a little bit. But I've started shooting on my feed some black and white stuff the last 2 weeks. And I've just been using the 6.6 application, which just shoots. It's almost using the native camera, but it just crops it square.
Yep.
It doesn't, you know.
6x6?
And yeah, 6x6. So I use that, and Hipstamatic. I go back and forth between the two of them. I mean, like Hipstamatic is much faster, has a much bigger buffer for shooting than the 6x6. I mean, I think you can only get 3 shots off with the 6x6 before it just stalls out. And with Hipstamatic, you can do about 9. It's pretty much those are the two cameras apps that I enjoy using. I don't really use anything else. I've been playing around with other things, like different effects. Like there's this application that just came out called Average Camera Pro,
yeah,
which I've been using to make like multiple exposures during rush hour.
Very cool.
Or for doing like some sort of like you could do like a 2-minute exposure of like I did this off of like waves of the inlet where off of Atlantic City's inlet, which was destroyed by Sandy, and it, you know, you almost don't see the water; it just looks like a cloud. It sort of gives you this Michael Kenna-ish sort of feel.
So it's funny that you mentioned that shortly after we talked about the iPhone 5. Average Cam Pro is one of my favoritest apps ever. and it was one of my favoritest apps ever back when I had the iPhone 4 because of what you're talking about. You can use it as a sort of almost like a slow shutter type of effect.
Right.
But that's actually not what the app is intended for. It's actually intended to do low light kind of noise photography, low noise photography.
Right.
When I did tests with it, when I shot with the iPhone 4, it would take, I don't know, whatever I did, 16 shots and it would take like 24 seconds or something. And
right.
Then when I use it with the iPhone 5, the processor is so much faster, it knocked it down by like a quarter of the amount of time. So you don't get the motion and the slow shutter type of effect as much.
Oh, that's no fun.
So just so you know before you upgrade.
I've been going to like, let's say like Grand Central during rush hour, and I didn't want to buy like a tripod case for my camera, so I have this like super clamp and a normal tripod.
Yeah,
it's like this, you know, it's ridiculously big for a phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just stick it in there, and I use it for like multiple exposures of people walking by and stuff like that.
Very awesome. That was one of my tips way back, was using a Manfrotto super clamp as a tripod mount slash just big chunk of meat that you can use it to stick anywhere.
Exactly.
Oh, I lost my track of questions. Did you have one coming up, Matt?
No, I did not.
You failed me.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Let me go back over here and see what Mark's last ones were. Oh, so he wants to know if you have a personal favorite lens/film combo in Hipstamatic.
Well, I do. I like my lens a lot. I mean, I for the longest time, I just used the John S and the Ina, what was it, 69, the native one that everyone, you know, started with, and that's what I shot most of my Libya project with and Afghanistan. And then when my lens came out and I switched to the kind of more square, Ina, what I forget which number it is, the newest one, 69, 39, 35. The one that's not, it's more square than rounded edges.
I don't know.
You know, so that's primarily what I use. And right now for the black and whites, that, shooting, I'm still using my lens and then the Freedom film, which doesn't have a border. It's borderless, which is, it's nice.
Nice.
A little bit of a change.
Excellent. So I'm gonna press. I sent you an email, and hopefully you're not too underprepared. But what I would like to get from you is what we call focus points. Just a tip or suggestion for the listeners that you'd like to share. Anything that can help them out in their mobile photography ventures? I did catch you off guard, huh?
No, I'm trying to think of something, you know, I can give a piece of advice rather than you know, I think it's really interesting coming from a, you know, classical photography background, and even with digital photography, sometimes you discipline yourself by not shooting everything you see. And, you know, I think that what's interesting about digital photography now is that it doesn't cost you anything to shoot more. You know, you're not spending money on film and developing. And I think what helps you grow as a photographer is constantly exploring. It's constantly photographing and exploring your surroundings. And if there's one little thing that stands out to you, don't always dismiss it. Just take out your phone and take a picture. Whether or not it works out is up to the photo gods. But I think the amazing tools we have are not just the tools themselves, but their accessibility and ability to just be used constantly without, you know, you don't need to take them to a lab.
Right, without fear of, you know, wasting money.
Yeah, exactly. So I would just say, just keep on trucking, and you know, even I find myself, I'm like, I don't really want to take a picture of that. You know? And I'm like, wait a second, I should. I mean, it makes no difference. You know, so why not? I think that's really important.
That's awesome. I'm kind of in the same place right now with exercising. I don't really feel like doing it, but I kind of have to.
You're talking to a man who has two infants. I've given up on exercising. I just look at pictures of people exercising. And it makes me feel better.
Awesome. Awesome.
I think about a push-up. Does that count?
Well, it counts if you get tired while you're thinking about it.
That's half the battle. So if you think about two push-ups, it's like thinking of, it's like doing one. You got
it. Perfect. Then I'm set.
Awesome. Listen, Ben, I'm going to let you go. I wanted to thank you very, very much. I also wanted to give you an opportunity to tell everybody where they can find you and plug anything else you have coming up.
Sure. I'm on Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, Facebook. It's just Ben Lowy, B-E-N-L-O-W-Y. I'm on there. I'm just kind of kind of hanging in there. Don't have any massive new things coming up. Finishing up a couple of projects, and we'll see where the world takes us in 2013.
Sweet. Very cool. Thank you very much for coming on. I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you. All right, Ben. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Bye. Bye.
Thank you.
Awesome interview with Ben Lowy. What do you think, Matt?
It was tremendous.
Very excited. In the break, Matt mentioned to me that he has a new favorite guy.
I don't know. I'm a little bit of an adrenaline junkie, so to have someone on the show that, is covering wars and hurricanes and stuff like that, I'm envious, and I'm somewhat idolizing him right now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, very, very, very neat. Awesome stories, and it gives you a little bit of that, after watching a really cool movie, and now you want to go out and do it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah, very cool. All right, well, let's move into today's post pick of the week, and conveniently enough, it's not Mark's turn.
That is very convenient.
It happens to be my turn. We love you, Mark. And I have chosen a picture that came in late last week, so almost into this week, and so I'm going to say that it qualifies to be this week's post picture of the week. And
I'll go along with that.
Okay, cool. It was submitted to our Facebook page, so that is always a viable area to post pictures to if you'd like to. And in the future, if you want to have your picture considered for post pick of the week, all you need to do is either post it to Facebook or Instagram or Twitter with the hashtag TinyShutter. All right, so anyway, this picture was posted by a gentleman named Rex Lisman, and it's a portrait of a girl, and it's done in complete black and white with some really nice lighting, and it's just a very attractive portrait, and I enjoy it, and I like it, and so that is why I'm choosing it as my selection this week for post pick of the week. Great portrait, great job, Rex, and thank you very much for sharing.
It's a solid choice. You know what I like about this photo?
Do tell.
It makes you want to know more about the girl.
Sure.
Like the look that she has, it's this look, and I can't really pinpoint what the look is, but it makes you want to know kind of what's going through her head.
Yeah. You know what? It's funny you say that, because what it does also do is, sometimes you see these kind of portraits that kind of go overboard reaching for drama. And this one doesn't do that. I mean, it gives you a bit of a taste of drama, but it doesn't like overpower you with drama. Actually, I just clicked on it, and now I see that Rex has given us a description, so I'm just going to go ahead and read his description. I have been very curious about how well my iPhone would do at making portraits. This is the most recent one I've made. I used Hipstamatic on my iPhone to shoot it. I lit her with the modeling light on a White Lightning 1600. I processed the image on my iPad with Snapseed and then resized, selectively sharpening in Photoshop. I think the iPhone performed very well, and I agree completely.
Yeah, I mean, the features are tack sharp. Every hair, her eyes, super sharp. And in the interview, Ben mentioned about having his iPhone clamped to a tripod, and about it being kind of silly and overkill that his phone was on this huge tripod. But I'm going to say Rex wins in the fact that he used a White Lightning 1600 to yeah. light a photo that he took with an iPhone.
But he only used the modeling lamp, so that's pretty cool. That's even a next step up, I think, because the modeling lamps don't push out that much wattage.
That's true.
All right. Well, thank you very much for sharing. And like I mentioned, everybody, if you'd like to have your pictures featured on Tiny Shutter's post pick of the week, take them over to Instagram or Twitter with the hashtag Tiny Shutter, or you can share them over on Facebook at facebook.com/TinyShutter. Thank you very much. Oh, so now that we're out of that, let's briefly move into reminding people about our Oloclip giveaway. If you're listening to this, you have, another 3 or 4 weeks? I don't remember what we wrote down as far as the date goes. January 8th is the deadline. There it is. I wrote it right there. January 8th to post your pictures to either Instagram or Twitter with the hashtag TS Olloclip, OlloClip, or on Facebook, same thing though, just hashtag it, and we're going to choose a lucky winner on the January 15th show that will win themselves a brand new Olloclip direct from Olloclip, who is allowing you to choose any color and let them know whether you have 4, 4S, or 5.
Very cool.
Yep. Super cool. So, again, moving on, and we're going to hop into our picks of the week. And do you want to go first, Matt?
Yeah, I'll do that. This week, I just have an app that I've been playing with a little bit. It is called Pick Boost. And I'm just always looking for just some different thing to edit my photos with. And this is just an app where you have a lot of the usual things that most other apps have, like saturation, sharpness, and all that stuff. But the one thing that I've really been playing around a lot with in this particular app is curves. And I just think that is a super cool feature. And this does curves. If you're at all familiar with Photoshop, there's a luminance curve, which basically is just general dark and light tones, or a more complicated RGB curve where wow. You could control the red, green, and blue hues independently of each other. And that's what Pick Boost has. That has the RGB
and it allows you to adjust the curves for each of those individually.
It does, yes.
Wow, very impressive.
Yeah, it's pretty freaking cool. And the other cool thing is that if you have a whole bunch of pictures that you want to edit in the app that are similar to each other, you can actually save the curves and then apply them to all the subsequent photos.
It's huge.
Yeah, very cool. I believe the app is 99 cents in the App Store. Definitely worth it if you're looking for just something new to play around with.
Very awesome. Very awesome. Thank you very much for bringing that to the table. Because yeah. Mine is going to be weak. This week, Matt, you are going to beat me on Focus Point. Did I call it Focus Point when I announced it?
I have no idea.
Hopefully I didn't call it Pick of the Week. Don't rewind if you're listening to this right now. mine's pretty weak, and I am going to go ahead and suggest Snapseed. For those of you who already have it, make sure you go and update it. And for those of you who don't, you now have zero excuse not to go and get it. It is free, free forever now, or at least until... I doubt they could go backwards with that. Hey, we decided we made a mess up, and we're now going to charge $4.99 again. Probably not going to happen. Snapseed's a great app. I still love it. I still use it faithfully on, well, I would say 95% of my pictures go through Snapseed. Maybe a little less. Maybe only 93.5. But it's definitely my favorite app. It's the most used app on my iPhone, and I love it. So Snapseed, that's my photo. That's my focus point of the week. And that's it, folks. I think we're going to bring it down to a close.
Hey, real quick, my focus point is $1.99.
Okay, let's change that. $1.99. And if you're listening to this, make sure you head over to facebook.com/tinyshutter and wish Mark a get well soon. And head over to tinyshutter.com for links and information from today's show. And head over to Instagram, where you can hashtag your pictures tinyshutter, add them to our pool, possibly get chosen as the post pick of the week. You can also head over to Twitter, follow us there at tinyshutter, and hashtag your photos tinyshutter to also be possibly selected as the post pick of the week. Same thing goes for Facebook. And I am going to wind this episode down and say thank you very much. You can check me out at Keith_Tharp on Instagram. And Matt?
I can be found on Instagram and Twitter at mhoffmanphoto.
Thank you very much, folks, and we will talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sweet.
Yay.
Yay. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Great interview.
Yeah, that was cool. That was, like, right up my alley. I liked it.
Very cool.
Hey, so,
yeah.
I'm about to pee in my pants.
Oh, go pee. I'll go pee too, and we'll meet back.
Okay, cool.
All right, bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, head over to iTunes and leave us a review and a 5-star rating. See you next week.